From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in Rochester, where a 17-year-old mother is spending time with her 4-month-old son. Her visit is cut short because the young mother must catch a bus to get back to a shelter where she lives. Her baby cannot come with her, so he is staying at the Crisis Nursery, a facility run by the Center for Youth. As the mother walks out of the room, another woman is watching. The mother tells that woman that she doesn't know if she will see her son for 2 days. She's trying to finish school, has to rely on bus passes to get around, and doesn't know where she will be from day to day. The mother asks the woman, "Will my son remember me?" To question the woman says broke her heart, and it pushed her to act. And the person we're talking about who observed this, who was pushed to act, is Elaine Spall, the executive director of the Center for Youth and a longtime member of Rochester City Council. Elaine has dedicated decades of her life to helping young homeless people in Rochester, and now she says she's not seeking re-election, in part so she can give really all of her time to helping the Center for Youth and teens like that young mom. Spall and her team are hoping to create an extended host homes program where community members will offer their love, support, and yes, their homes to young parents who want to stay with their children in times of crisis. This hour, we discuss the goals around that program, the critical needs of homeless youth in our community. And it seems like maybe a tall challenge, but we're going to talk about what the research tells us and what they're going to try to get done here. So Elaine Spall, Executive Director for the Center for Youth and a member for a little while more of Rochester City Council, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. You know, I just love being here, and you are my guy, and I appreciate it so much because you embrace even difficult things like this one. You know, there are transformative moments in your life where you stand and you hear and you feel, and we cry easily. I'm not going to cry right now because this is a radio show. No one will even see my tears. But honestly, that was the moment. I had already thought maybe 12 years on council was enough. That was the moment when I looked at that young woman and said, I got work to do, and I need to do something different with any time I have, not that I have any spare time. We hear the expression, it takes a village, which has become so trite and so ridiculous. Honestly, that's sort of what we're talking about. We are talking about...
This is like the ultimate takes a village.
This is like the ultimate, it takes a village. It takes a village. It takes your house. It takes your, you know, your refrigerator. It takes... Your enormous energy and support. And obviously, we know we're looking for 15 families across Monroe County. We know that's not going to be difficult. But it's a tricky program. It's an interesting program. We have models all over the country. A couple of them we're going to talk about today with you. We know if anybody can do this, it's a Center for Youth and the Rochester community. And you having us here today is a kind of voice we need. We've done a couple outreach efforts, but this is another one right here. So, you know, it is time. Time is short. Someone was teasing me about my own energy. I have the energy of a 12-year-old boy. We all know that. But I really am sort of in the fourth quarter. You know, I'm aging and I don't feel it. But, you know, you got stuff to do. And I'm pretty desperate about this one. What does a 17-year-old have to do to stay with her child? I'm not going to go with examples of where moms and babies have been separated in our southern border. We're not going to go there today. But I was feeling like, holy cow. This is happening here on my watch? I don't think so. So we got a dream, Evan. We got a dream. And I think this dream can come true.
Well, listeners, this hour, as you hear about the program and their vision for it, we always say in WXXI, we're glad to have conversations that connect people. You know, we can't endorse causes, but we'll make sure that you know, if you want to get in touch with the Center for Youth and the people involved in this program today, if you're willing to open your doors. We'll talk about that coming up here. So this will be a chance for you to hear more about that. We've got a couple of assistant directors in the Runaway Homeless Continuum at the Center for Youth, Faith Davignon. Faith, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Sarah Bowles-Rogers. Sarah, welcome. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Malia Davis is an advocate on the street outreach team at the Center for Youth. Malia, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to talk just a little bit more about what the need actually is here, because you had that moment that was a very personal moment that hit you. And when was that, by the way? How long ago was that?
It was November 6th.
Oh, you remember the day?
No, I remember because we, you know why? Because
four and a half months ago.
Right, we had an open house. At the nursery, so I happened to be there in the evening, and this young woman was standing by her baby's crib. And I'm a Gigi, I'm a grandma. I mean, I was like, come on. So I'm going to just take the baby and the mom home myself. I was like, that makes sense. Maybe somebody wants to do that. But that was in November, and I knew that I had to make a final decision about counsel really by January 1st. I really needed to be fair. It takes a whole long time to get campaigns and all that stuff going. I was leaning that way anyway, so that was the moment. But I should have known sooner. Because in this community, over the last 3 or 3.5 years, we've seen programs completely close that used to serve this population. One of the things that's happening, and I was quoted in a DNC editorial of saying, if we lost half of our fancy airlines, like to the Caribbean and South, or if half of our fancy restaurants closed, people would be like, out of their minds, right? We would read about it. We would hear about it. We lost 60% of our homeless shelters and nobody noticed. And so what happens now is that you finally see the impact of those losses. You see what really happened. It takes a while. It sort of trickled down. But when Mercy Residential, we don't blame them, but they closed all those beds. They were the emergency beds for 16 and 17-year-old teen parents. This closed. They went away completely. Other agencies stopped doing the programs because it's hard work. Funding wasn't there. The Center for Youth continues to do programs, fill gaps, and worry about the funding later. It just seems to be something that is our way of doing. We have already gained $100,000 in support of this program. And another 50 coming the way. So sometimes you just got to put it out there. You have to imagine, you have to dream big, and people want to be by your side, like you've been by our side in terms of not endorsing, but helping us tell our story.
Well, sure. And so in this case, you've got, you know, the story that we tell at the outset and the story that touched you was a 17-year-old mom with a 4-month-old.
Right.
Are we generally talking about young moms, teenage moms,
yep.
homeless moms?
Yep. 16 and 17-year-olds.
16, 17 years old.
Right. I mean, because there are some, although there's not enough, there are some places for older teen and young adults. That population, which is so vulnerable anyway, imagine raising a 5-month-old by yourself and then having to separate. You know, Evan, what bothers me a bit is that we have judgments. We think, well, she's a teen mom. She probably doesn't feel the way about her child that we feel about. That's just plain wrong. That's just plain wrong. You know that's wrong, that people are deeply dedicated to their children. And the fact that she would not stay in a place that was not safe, that she ran from a place where she was staying because of an abusive situation, tells you something about the kind of mom she really is.
All right. So in a moment, I'm going to ask Faith, Sarah, Malia to kind of talk about not only the work they do, but what they have seen that kind of bolsters some of these stories that we're hearing. But let's get right to it, Elaine. You need how many people to do what exactly?
I need 15.
You need
families.
15 families to open their house.
Yeah. I need 15 families to say
open their home
for 3 months. 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, I am willing to be a host family. I'm willing to be a family that is going to embrace, that is going to invest, that is going to help nurture, that is going to be a friend, is going to be a mentor. We know that it's not foster care. It doesn't have the same kind of regulations, but it will have a state approval, very strict policy. You have to have a special, you know, you have to have an extra bedroom with a door that closes. You know, you don't have to have a suite, but you got to have some privacy. And you also know that we're going to do everything we can because we have somebody to help you. Do you need a crib? Do you need a car seat? Do you need diapers? We're not going to ask a family to take on the expense. It won't pay, maybe a little bit, but it won't pay the way foster care does. That's not the point. We believe in 3 months what can happen is modeling is a way to say this is what family looks like. This is how a mom holds a baby, feeds the baby. Some of our young moms, you know, no judgment, but they put a bottle against the stroller and the baby's like 4 months sort of feeding himself while the mom's on her phone. When talk about the importance of holding and caring in a loving, kind way, not in a judgmental way. So we're not looking for people that think they have a sense of, you know, they know best. We're looking for people who really understand justice, what it looks like, equity, what it looks like, and a commitment to being part of a solution. You know, we always hear about what does solution-based look like. This is solution-based. If I were to open a shelter, another shelter, for emergency shelter, it would cost me at least $500,000. We can do this program for a third of that cost.
15 families is what you need.
That's what I need.
But so let me just
Do you think your wife is listening?
I know you're going to find people. I know you.
Yes.
But I want to ask you very bluntly about a number of things here. 3 months is what you're thinking?
We're looking for 3 months.
What happens at the end of the 3 months? Do you say to that family, thank you for the service you provided? And, you know, are you going to ask them to recommit to a different? Because what you're really going to need is more than 15 if people feel like, hey, I can do 3 months. I don't know if I can do another. Or, I mean, it's going to be an ongoing need.
Yeah, exactly. We also really love the idea, and these wonderful women with me can tell you, there is something about a possible connection to that family that doesn't end at the end of that 3 months. So we get a mom and a baby into an apartment, and they stay connected. So the baby's sick, and they have someone to call, right? The baby and the mom, you know, want to celebrate a holiday. They have no place to go. So that is also something that we don't know yet, but can you imagine being connected? Many of us who have had our own teenagers continued. I was that mom, you know. Some of my daughter's friends would call and say, you know, I'm at the hairdresser. When we're city people, I'm at the hairdresser and for prom, and my mom didn't show up. Can you come and pay for my, you know, my little hairdo? And so I did. So we were those moms, you know, and I got that. Our folks don't have it. These women don't have anybody. Imagine raising a child all by yourself. So think about the connections, speaking of connections, that can be made for a lifetime. It doesn't end there. But you're right. We're saying to families, obviously, we need you maybe to sign on for more than 1 3-month stint. But also you can say, you know what? I never want the summer. I can't do it in the summer because my college kids are home. I'm really good September through the end of, you know, November. I've got that extra room. I don't want the summer. I don't want, I want a baby over the age of one. I want a mom, you know, I'm an LGBT family, and we would really love to have a young person who maybe is more comfortable in that environment. So enormous flexibility. That's why it's not foster care. We're not dissing foster care. This is not foster care. It's so much flexibility.
So it's not foster care. What about legal liability?
They're certified by the state. And we got their back. So we're going to have a case manager. So, you know, let's say at 11 o'clock one night, the teen mom acts like a teenager, right, and got an issue. You call the case manager. We have 24-hour coverage. Nobody will be on their own. That's so important. Also, maybe after a month, that's not a good fit. We have to say, you know what, maybe there's somebody else that fits better. Also, the onboarding. You know, the process of getting connected isn't, hey, someone's going to be dropped off tomorrow. No, you're going to have an opportunity to talk, to have expectations, lots of training. We would really love to have the program in place, let's say by July 1st. Got lots of time. So people shouldn't be afraid of what it means or, you know, if they're not successful. We're not about that. This is an opportunity to dream big. And sometimes dreams fall short a little. We don't give up. We keep going. It's going to be that way.
And what happens after the end of 3 months for the mom and the child?
The mom and the child, we hope, will get into either a reunification. That's always a possibility, not likely if it's been a long time out of the home, or in their own housing, in a rapid rehousing or in an apartment where we can then monitor that and keep them connected. And then maybe they stay connected to that amazing family that has now another mom and baby to love. Wouldn't you love that?
Well, if you want to get in touch, and if you think you know someone, maybe it's you, maybe it's someone else, if you're interested and you're wondering how to do that, what's the best way to get in touch with Center for Youth?
Do you want my cell phone number?
You would do it.
I would do it.
What's the easiest way?
473-2464, Center for Youth.
Do it again.
473-2464, the Center for Youth. You know, the other thing I want to say, Evan, is that we believe this community, I mean, the Center for Youth has benefited from an enormous charitable donations through our galas and our for Fashion Week. Our game is $1 million this year, believe it or not, $1 million for fashion. This is a generous community, but this is a way for people maybe who can't write a big check, but who would rather do something that has the kind of meaning. We also want folks to know, if you're part of a faith-based community, a community, a neighborhood community, and you want us to come and speak to your group about this, we would love to do that. Let's say a neighborhood, let's just use the Beechwood neighborhood, where one of our crisis nurseries is. Let's say the Beechwood neighborhood says, we want to have two host-home families in Beechwood neighborhood in the northeast, southeast, northeast side of our town, you know where Beechwood is around there. And if there's moms and babies in that neighborhood, let's really be the village for them, right? So that's another amazing, or you have a church. We were at Asbury First, an amazing place, right? They're going to look at their congregation. So we're ready, you know, we're ready to go anywhere that'll have us. And that would be a way to do it as well.
I want to ask our other guests, you know, how they perceive these issues and some of the work they've done. And I'll just kind of go around the table here, because I think it's a good way to help our community see in more specific ways what the need is. Sarah, how do you see it?
Sure. I definitely see the need here for more supports, like Elaine has talked about, with the parenting and pregnant teens. One of the programs I oversee with the Center for Youth is our maternity group home. It's a wonderful place, our Chrysalis House, and we also provide supports for our parenting young mothers. So this wholesome project can be a link to that, and providing those wraparound supports for our young mothers in the community.
How steady a need do you see? I mean, what is it like week to week there?
It's ongoing. And it really just kind of depends on the youth in the moment, where their crisis is, what's their trauma, kind of what brought them into seeking services. Are they pregnant, soon to deliver? Are they currently parenting? It really just kind of depends on the need of the young person, and really our staff there wrap around supports 110% to really meet our young people where they are and to give them the resources they need.
And without that kind of help, I don't want to tee up something too obvious, but I do think we need to keep connecting this. This is not just about, you know, one sort of short stretch in someone's life here. The resources have a ripple effect for a long time, don't they?
Absolutely. So you see it across generations. You know, so you see a young mother who's kind of lived through poverty, you know, or has been through the cycle of being a young mother. So it really, the ripple effect is vast and great, and kind of providing them the resources allows them to really make changes for themselves as a young mother, but also for their children.
Do you suspect that you're going to see the community come through in this particular need as we talk about a program looking for extended host homes?
Absolutely, because as Elaine spoke of, we don't currently have in Rochester, in our county, emergency shelters for our young parents and mothers. So really a program like our host homes and our transitional living programs are greatly needed to serve this population.
Faith, how do you see these issues?
I would really like to focus this afternoon on my work at the crisis nurseries.
Yeah.
And that work really, there's been so many times, and I think the hardest part of the job has been to look at a mother or some single young dads as well, and to say, yes, we can take in your baby, but our program is only licensed to take in the child, not you. We've seen young parents stay in unsafe situations while we cared for their children. We've seen them stay in their cars. Again, just as Elaine spoke of, the young girl at our open house that was separated from her baby, although we took great care of her and her child, we were unable to do that in the same program. So the gap is huge, and unfortunately, it's huge in the community, and our agency is just willing to step up and say, how can we close that? How can we ensure that, you know, parents are with their children no matter what?
Are you confident that you're going to get help for these needs here?
I am confident that we're going to get help. I was at the event at Asbury First, and that was amazing. That was an amazing group of people, an amazing group congregation that's willing to support. And that was just our first kind of journey into this, looking for support in the community. But the connection piece, I think of youth that have stayed in our shelter program that may or may not have been parenting, young parenting youth, but other youth that are saying, you know, I'm homeless because I just got out of my first semester of college, and the dorm is closed, and now what do I do? And they truly have no adult family support in this community. And so they literally have nowhere to go, and then they become homeless during Christmas break. That's not something that should ever be. So I think when you talk about the long-term connections that the host home families could provide, it's just that. You know, you think of a single, just one young man I'm thinking of, 18 years old, just turned 18, going to MCC, and now he has nowhere to be. He has nowhere to eat Thanksgiving dinner. That's a shame. So I know that our community can wrap around those individuals for sure.
I am not surprised, Elaine, to hear Faith invoke again Asbury First. I'll just say we had Reverend Dr. Stephen Cady on the program recently, and they have faced a number of challenging issues as a congregation. They continue to do so. And best I, sort of observing, there is a ton of love in that community.
Oh, my goodness. We were there. So just to piggyback, we were there on Tuesday night, and the place was full. And a lot of people were there from the congregation, not ready to sign up themselves, but ready to find out who they could connect it. What did they know? There were three families who actually said, I'm in. We got to go through and vet them and all that. One of them was a young woman who read an op-ed I did. I did an op-ed saying what my wish for 2019, because by then I was all about this. She read it and she said, and I actually knew her as a child. She's a city kid and herself, now a doctor with two of her own kids, and said, I can't imagine raising these kids by myself. I'm ready to help. So there's, and then there was another woman who is part of the congregation who said, sign me up. I'm ready. So, you know, it takes a while. You go through the process and you have to, but I do think we're going to get the families. I do. And I think the way we're going to get them is through beloved communities. So, Gregory Boyle, did I give you a copy of that book, Tattoos of the Heart? I'm going to drop it off if I haven't. I need to do that. Gregory Boyle, like Jeffrey Canada, did what they did. Jeffrey Canada, of course, is our Harlem Children's Zone guy. Why did you do it? Because I got tired of burying young men. Well, I'm tired of seeing our community not do what they should do. I just feel like we in Rochester should be the model for the state, and we can be. We have host home families right now. They're short term. So we know what to do. So we have families who sign up for 3 to 5 days. Our shelters are full. They're going to take somebody in for a very short time. We're asking for that model now to be extended further. So we know it can happen. We know there's the right kind of protocol and processes and certifications, and we got people's back.
Well, you seem to have some models in other places. I mean, yeah. I'm looking at key findings from host home programs in Washington State
that
I know you've been touting. Yeah. So let me just read a little bit here, because what Elaine is talking about, this would not be reinventing the wheel here.
Exactly.
Asking members in the community to literally just open a room in your house for a young mother and child. So a report from the Washington State Office of Homeless Youth Prevention and Protection Programs did an examination of host home programs in that state. And they've got this list of findings that, essentially show it works, that it is more efficient, tends to be, yes, community-driven, so community populations, whether it's church congregations or otherwise, but more cost-effective systemically,
right,
is what they found. Not requiring new brick-and-mortar shelters,
right,
or youth housing programs. And, just looking at one of their findings, in absence of host home programs, unaccompanied homeless youth may have no safe living alternative if they live in communities where no or limited shelter or housing stock exists and are not screened in for CPS services. So in many ways, the program says, or I should say the study finds, host home programs provide a stable place to live and case management services and are considered an important intervention that keeps youth off the street. So, I mean, it sort of sounds obvious, but it has been studied.
It's been studied. And so one of the places that we're finding more and more, there's very little really effective and available services in our rural areas. And we have, at the center, been doing a whole lot more work in Mount Morris and Dansville and places. I don't even, me, I'm a city girl, so I would have to sort of sleep overnight if I went out there. But, you do have more and more and more growing poverty, growing domestic violence, growing homelessness in our rural areas. So we would love to find a rural home a little bit further out in Monroe County. So that's another thing. It's not just city kids.
Not just city.
A Faith, who is sitting across from me, always says crisis does not discriminate. And that is really what we see at the nursery. One of my stories at the nursery was, and I think I may have told you, Evan, a little girl sitting in a chair, waiting, a little blonde, beautiful child, waiting for her mom to come back from chemo, radiation, young mother with a brain tumor, that little child sitting there. And, you know, so you have judgments about who these families are. We're wrong. It looks like just all of us. And that's the kind of thing we want to say. It does take a village, and villages are multicultural and they're diverse. We would love grandparent types who have now, you know, empty nesters who have some time and maybe are retired. We would love our LGBT community to come forward. We would love to have a lesbian couple, let's say. We would love to have single parents. I mean, we may have someone whose children are grown or was never married and has said, you know, I've never really been able to embrace and have an opportunity to be part of a family unit. I'd love to do that. I have the time. And I have the space and the home, and I can do that. The state will come in with us. Our own team internally is ready for this. We know what to do. We're not going to say, you know, is the house pretty enough, or is it, you know, is the lawn mowed? We're not looking. We're looking at the kind of environmental energy. Is there a home that has that kind of love and connection, and maybe also some of them, not all of them, should be on bus line, should be easily accessible. So, you know, Steve and Katie, who I'm growing to really, really just adore, asked the other night, because of course he was there himself, and he said,
"Pastor at Asbury First, go ahead."
Yes, and he said, "You know, what are the characteristics of these people? What do they look like?" I wanted to say, like, Stephen, they look like you, but you know we're not looking for fancy pants with fancy houses. We're looking for the real deal, and we know the real deal when we see it.
Malia Davis is an advocate on the Street Outreach Team at the Center for Youth. How do you see these challenges?
I think it's really important for, I can say that for parenting mothers or even fathers who are trying to, like, find services in the community or accessing services in and out of state, it's really important for them to actually have the guidance from whoever they may seek help from, because that can take away from their accessibility being present in their children's lives. And it's really important for them to be in their children's lives, because it can take away from, you know, like the adolescence of, like, the parental guidance that their children may need. So it can be very conflicting if they're out looking for services in the community, because it takes away that time. And being in a host home will actually give them that time to, you know, be able to have the accessibility to be with their children and work on whatever they may need. So
that's such a good point. I can't even imagine just the strain of having to try to figure out where services could be found.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you find one thing but not another, or something for your child but not a place for yourself, or mm-hmm. questions on work or transportation, that's one, obviously, it's one of the big challenges in the anti-poverty initiative and trying to kind of coordinate. But you still see that as a huge challenge, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to kind of peel back those layers. Are you optimistic that this is going to get done?
Definitely. As long as we keep working hard, as, you know, as the Center for Youth has done for many years, you know, being on the Street Outreach Team, we see this kind of stuff every week. So, you know, being able to go out to the community and talk to young people about services, and, you know, having to give out flyers, give out pamphlets, so therefore they can come and access services if needed, or if they're in crisis at the moment, we can, like, take them to the Center for Youth to actually get help with services. It's something we can tackle together in a quickly way. So,
and Malia, let me ask you, and I want to ask all of you this, because now my mind goes back to a conversation I think I had Christmas week. We had so many good conversations with local pastors in the Christmas season as we talked about what charity means. And it is nothing wrong with writing checks. All the charities will tell you, you want to write checks, write checks. We'll take checks. But so much of the message is about actually interacting with people in need and not making people in need feel sort of otherized or less than. And that's hard. That is another level. And this is really kind of the ultimate it takes a village. I mean, are you willing to literally open a room in your house and bring somebody in? Malia, what would you say to maybe the charity-minded people listening right now who care very deeply but go, boy, I don't know. Maybe I've got the space, but that's a lot to maybe bring in someone I don't know.
I would say,
you know, what would you say to that?
I would say keep an open heart, keep an open mind, because they are young people who are dealing with things that is unquestionable. And through the proper services and actual, like, creating a bond between those people, they can actually help them in many ways they may not know of, and also help them, like, find different ways to go independent. So it's really important for them to create a space for the both of them to be comfortable and actually have that space to grow a bond so therefore they can learn more about being independent.
As I turn to Faith, I'm trying to remember, producer Megan Mack will remind me, who was the pastor from Victor? And there's, I should remember every name who's ever been on this program, but it's, you know, it's a lot in 520 hours a year, who said, you know, you can do a good thing or you can do a God thing. And the God thing is when you actually interact with people. Not to say that the good thing, writing checks, is not a good thing. It's a good thing. But that stayed with me. I'll get you the name in a second because I thought that was profound. Faith, what would you say to families thinking about that?
I would definitely say that there are so many youth in our community that lack a person. And if you're talking about charity and you're talking about what members of the community can do, I think we take for granted that we all have a person. We take for granted, although maybe our kids don't, you know, love us in the moment or appreciate it, but we're their people, right? And our youth that we're serving are runaway and homeless youth, and they're not running away because they don't like the rules. This young mom was not leaving because she just didn't like that she couldn't see her boyfriend. She ran away to protect her baby. Okay, so these are the types of youth that we're supporting at the Center for Youth, and the youth that we see, all their crises are different, but what they all have in common is the lack of support, the lack of having a person. And like Malia said, if you could open your hearts and your mind and have a little faith in the Center for Youth and the services that we already wrap around our youth, and the way that we do that in a 24/7, 365-day-a-year way that only the center can provide, that the community could be someone's person.
Well, I turn to Sarah for some thoughts, our thanks again, Reverend Colin Pritchard, First Presbyterian Church of Victor. And Reverend, I'm sorry your name didn't come immediately to the top of my mind. It just means we need to have more conversations. So, Sarah, thoughts on that?
Sure, absolutely. And again, just to kind of piggyback off what everyone has said, we know working with the center and with our youth that when we are able to connect them with positive adults, it definitely increases outcomes as far as education, as far as relationships within the community, employment. So open your hearts. Do what you can. And again, it's a partnership with the agency. So it will be a good fit for the youth, a good fit for the host home family, and really making it kind of a smooth transition to where it works for everyone.
Okay, Elaine?
So, Evan, let me ask you the difference between charity and justice. That's what we're talking about. It's very simple. When I really want to get down to interviewing a staff member, I ask them, what's the difference between charity and justice? Do you know the difference?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot?
Sure.
Well, I'm going to think of how I would write this on a test for Professor Spall. I kind of think of it as the good thing and the God thing. I mean, I think justice is probably... It probably should be an inherent component of a society where we truly care about not just equality but equity, and that we don't offer preference, and that justice means that absolutely everybody is entitled to certain things that we as a society say that they should have, whereas charity may be an act of, hey, writing a check, feeling good about yourself, and moving on with your day.
You got it. You passed. You got an A+. Okay. So, you know, the Spall children, I'm sure they're not listening.
Which, by the way, before you go on, I wanna email me and say that I'm denigrating charity. I'm not. Listen,
no,
I've been with you.
Let me just go right there, because I am the greatest fundraiser in the world. Yes. I raised $150,000.
And you got no problem with check raising.
I got no problem. And I did. We're laughing about the gala. I raised $150,000 Saturday night in 30 minutes. It's not about that.
Yeah.
The difference is, and you nailed it, and the Spall children, and you know them both, grew up in a household where those are the kind of conversations we had at dinner, right? So I would ask them, like, whatever, Mom, we want to talk about, like, Star Wars or something. No, you have to understand, charity is amazing, and it's a good, 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 good thing. And we should all practice as much as we can, particularly with the United Way campaign underway, and all of us needing so much. Justice is the right thing all the time, non-negotiable, no questions asked, just do it. I almost, Megan would have been upset with me because I almost
That's okay. We have a dump button.
You have a dump button. Yeah. But, you know, that's the difference. you might decide that this is the year you're going to give, you know, $100 to five charities, but, you know, next year you're not. Or you might decide that you're going to give, and when I tell you we are the beneficiary of charity, you have no idea. We just got, let's say, all the supplies out of a company that was moving, like, and we take it. I don't know, post-it notes, pens. Charity is amazing, and there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, I wish there was another word for it. Justice. Justice is how you feel when you create a beloved community, in the words of Gregory Berth, a beloved community. What does it look like? We are all the same. We're all equal. When a beloved community, and that's what we try to do at the Center for Youth. Look at these amazing women with me, right? There's 274, not quite as good as them, but back there waiting for us. This is a beloved community. How do we make Rochester a beloved community? Because we look at each other and say, you're just like me, and I'm so happy to know you and to be part of a world that we share. We can do this, Rochester. We can do this.
All right. If you want to contact the Center for Youth, if you're interested in helping out, it's up to you. The phone number is?
585-473-2464. Is there another number we use, too? Let's just use that one. Yeah. They're like, yeah.
So there you go. Elaine Spall, the executive director of the Center for Youth, Faith Devignon, Sarah Vols Rogers, Malia Davis are all here talking about this effort to create the extended host homes program that, if it goes the way they want it to, could launch by perhaps July 1st. And they're looking for 15 families in our community to start. And they're going to probably need a lot more than that, but we'll see. We are going to take our only break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to broaden the conversation a little bit about how Rochester as a community deals with poverty. Now, Elaine, the ubiquitous Elaine Spall, recently had a conversation with our colleague Helen Biandudi Hofer about poverty in Rochester. And she said a little bit that, in a sense, how we look at poverty itself is misplaced. So I'm going to ask her to tell us a little bit more about what she means, and we'll talk more about these issues on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, when we ask the question, how much screen time is too much for kids? We're often thinking about screen time at home, TV, video games, social media. But what about screen time in school? An increasing number of schools are incorporating devices into lesson plans. Should that screen time factor into overall limits? It's been a rather fierce debate in the expert community. We'll tackle it Friday on Connections. This is Connections, and I got a request for Elaine Spall to repeat the number if you want to call and help out at the Center for Youth and their effort that they're talking about this hour. What is the number you want people to use?
We would love to hear from you at 585-473-2464. We are open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday, but the phones roll over. There's always a person 24/7 that's going to answer your call. So don't be shy.
All right. And Don is asking, can host families set and enforce rules for their house? Can I say no alcohol or drugs in my house?
Absolutely, you can say that. Absolutely, you can say that safety rules are already going to be kind of a part of what we're doing. And we will have that kind of set up in those conversations with host home families and the youth that they're providing support for. But the case management component and the program manager of the host homes are going to be there to very much advocate for the youth, but also advocate for those host home families and really be there as a support.
All right. So there's certainly conversations to be had, though, with families about, you know, what you're comfortable with. And, you know, before you sign up, have those conversations. So Don, thank you for that. You know, so when you were talking to our colleague Helen Biandudi Hofer, you said that in many ways people can go throughout their lives and not feel all that touched by poverty. If we still live in a society where a lot of us can, if we want to, avoid it.
Right.
Pretty comfortably ourselves, right. Not have to sort of sully ourselves with the thoughts of what others are suffering with.
Right.
And when it comes to the big stories, the big scandals, the big problems, poverty is not as much of a scandal. So what you were saying in that interview was, you know, it's misplaced that we don't think of poverty as sort of a scandal.
Right. Yeah.
Should it be considered that way?
Yeah. You know, one of the things about accounts every once in a while, somebody wants to come and point their finger and say, shame on you. So I'm not talking about shaming because that doesn't work. But I do think we don't have the level of outrage that we would have for some other things. And this program and other programs, and there's many, many, really are poverty busting. Think about it. I'm going to give you an example. Many, many, many young parents use urgent care well, they actually use the emergency rooms. They don't even know how to access. They don't have insurance. They don't have good pediatry. They don't have primary care. Those are things those of us sitting here, including you, and your fabulous wife, would never imagine would not be available to you. That you would have a pediatrician that when you bring your son for his well baby visits, now his well little boy visits, now maybe his big, is he eight?
Seven.
Seven. Okay.
Tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Happy birthday. Yeah. What's his name?
Reese.
Happy birthday, Reese. Yeah. You would never think of not having Reese have that well baby visit, right? Annually. Maybe he has a little sore throat, you rush in. We have families for whom the emergency room is their primary care physician. That just doesn't work, right? It doesn't work for the hospitals. It certainly doesn't work for them. We're trying to say, boy, you're part of a family for whom primary care, for whom insurance, for whom understanding interventions is a part of their thinking. We're going to make sure that family helps that mom and baby understand why it's a good idea to have a primary care physician, right? That's a little teeny glimpse. So think about the other things that we take for granted. You know, I told you once that I was with a group of young women years ago. None of these folks were around. And they said, Miss Elaine, we're going to eat before we pay. I don't know if I ever told you that story. It was so shocking to me, but I realized they had never been in a restaurant where you sit and you take an order and you eat and then you pay, right? They either been through drive-through fast food or just didn't believe that somebody would trust you. So these are cultural differences. Our young people deserve to feel like what it feels like to be served in a restaurant, right? I mean, it's a little thing. It's such a little thing. I was at a conference, and I had some young people with me years ago. And when you come in, they ask you for your credit card. Not a big deal. I have to, because you might get into the, I think that you might like into the minibar. You know, Evan, I'm not sure, right? Maybe not. But Reese might not. He went a little peanuts or something, right? So you got to have your credit card. Our kids don't have credit cards. People in poverty. So they can't play. The playing field is not level. These are all little examples of where we, and I'm certainly, you know, one of the people who wouldn't even question, here's my credit card, right? So we're seeing a way to break through some of those things. That's what I'm talking about.
So I'm going to ask you one tougher question, because, you know, you can't say nice things about me and think that it butters me up, because that just compels me to kind of turn it around harder.
Bring
on you.
Bring it on, buddy. Okay. Bring
so,
it on.
So you are a member of Rochester City Council for 12 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you are the executive director of the Center for Youth, and, mm-hmm. and you've worked on these issues. And what we've been talking about this hour are acts of personal kindness and giving in an effort to create justice in a community. I want to tie this with a question that was brought up by one of my favorite writers right now, is Anand Giridis, writes about philanthropy, and, mm-hmm. and he writes about government policy and systemic inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And he pointed to the college admission scandal in which, you know, parents were basically mm-hmm. paying to secure their spot. Mm-hmm. One of the people doing that, mm-hmm. Bill McGlashan, founded a charity with Bono. So, of course, the actresses get all the attention.
Right.
But
right.
McGlashan founded a charity
wow.
with Bono, and he spent his life
wow.
working on helping people who needed the most. But at night, he was trying to make sure his child had a spot locked down that no child could compete for. And he lost his job at the seat of the charity that he and Bono created over this. And Giridis is saying, look, philanthropy is important, charity is important, but we need policy as well, because we have to walk the walk in our personal life, but we have to ask government to help balance the scales a little bit too. Because when we just rely on philanthropy, even the Bill McGlashans of the world who do all this great stuff, and I'm not saying that you would have ever tried to buy a seat at a college for your child.
Yeah, no, I was.
You
a
didn't need to anyway.
Well, I was
know.
A dean of, you know, my kids, but I was also
know.
A dean of students, and I was the
I
person
know.
Saying you can't come.
I
yeah,
know,
yeah.
But he's saying yeah. it turns his stomach, because this is a guy who's doing a lot of the kind of work that you and others have done,
yeah.
but then still wants to rig the system for himself.
So there's one bad dude who thought he was entitled because he was that guy, and he got to do it because it was like,
maybe
the rules are different.
But he's saying government's got to do more. Has government done enough to level the field?
Well, let me tell you why I loved many of my years on city council, not every minute of every year. When I could find a way to help that family whose mom had to get to chemo and her street wasn't plowed in, get that street plug. That's government and justice. When there was an older man, for some reason, the bench between Culver and East Avenue Wegmans was removed, and that was he couldn't make it all the way. You got to get that bench back. There are minutes, and as a district council person, I have dozens and dozens and dozens of stories where person by person by person, I was able to use my role and government's resources to get things done. Maybe that's the best way, Evan. Maybe we're going to make it like we're looking for 15 families. I'll take one by one by one. Maybe government really does have to just stop trying to change the world all at once and say, what is today? What do we need today and for whom? You know, we have 56 school-based programs. We're in 56 different schools at the Center for Youth. I was with Dr. Aquino, Jaime Aquino, for a full day. He spent with me sitting with our young men over at New Beginning. And one of them said to him, the reason they loved our small school was because their teachers didn't know their name. And their teachers were able to tell them the names of all their favorite TV characters. We got to know kids' names. We have to know, at the Center for Youth, we know their names. So, you know, I think I look back on my 12 years. It's gone quickly. Part of me is sad to leave, because I think there's still some work that needs to be done. But every single neighborhood in the East District is better off today. I'm not taking credit, just is, whether it's downtown or Beechwood or wherever. But it's one by one by one, one by one by one, just like you have that sense of, and I do butter you up, but I actually want you to know, and Megan's going to kick me later, but you are adding a voice to this community that matters. You bring people in, you're respectful, you're prepared, and it matters. And we disagree sometimes, but it matters. So I look back with great fondness. I just don't want to be away from these guys as much as I have had to be.
I hear that. And on this particular case, it's not a case of whether we disagree. I just think it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
What is the need for personal charity, and what is the need for government policy?
Right.
And how does that intersect with what's happening in a world where we still see a lot of inequality. So you've heard this hour how you can help the Center for Youth if you want to do that. I want to ask Elaine's colleagues before we go what they think, what's top of their list for improving the situation of poverty. You all work in this community in such personal and important ways. What could happen right now that would start to change? Faith, you seem to jump in the mic first, so I'm going to grab you first there. Go ahead.
At the center, we follow a model called Housing First. And what we're looking at is not having anyone have to qualify for safety, right? Not having to qualify to have a safe place to sleep at night. So I think that's the first, like, poverty busters. Let's get people to a safe place without other criteria. Then the real work can be done.
So housing.
Housing.
Okay. Malia.
I think it's more of meeting youth where they're at, because our services are voluntary. So it's not like we're forcing youth to want to change their lives, but it's available if they want to. So what I usually do is when we go out into the street, talking to the youth, keep in mind, change is ready whenever you're ready. So change starts with you.
Okay. Sarah?
I would say increase partnerships in the community. We have some great services. Do we need more for our young people? Absolutely. But how we do that is to create partnerships within agencies, within host homes, to connect and bridge services for our young people.
All right. And Elaine, you know, what's top of the list right now for you?
I've been thinking a lot about education, and I'll tell you why. We have created an amazing connection with the MCC Foundation. So people give us money for, and we give it to the MCC Foundation, and Gretchen Wood and her amazing team target that money only for homeless young people, for young men in our school, for our families at the crisis. That money, so yesterday we were able to give $1,000 to a young man who was living in one of our shelters and going to MCC working, and he was short. So I'm thinking so much. We had a young woman that came and spoke at the gala, four children. We made it possible because of the nursery for her to finish MCC. So I'm thinking a lot about education recently, certainly graduating from high school, but also taking that next step and having that resource that somebody is saying, I want our homeless kids who are proving that they can do this to have a little bit of help. So that's what I'm thinking. And thank you for for those people who have stepped forward and for MCC. Wow, love it, love it.
As you get ready to exit council, you told our Beth Adams that you want to make sure that whoever succeeds you understands the importance of independence on Rochester City Council.
Yes.
Why did that come to mind as an issue for you?
Well, you know, I think that we have a role, and I think our city functions best under a strong mayor and strong council. This is a really important time for us to check each other in ways that are sometimes uncomfortable but must be respectful. We have to check each other. We have to come with our own perspective. We have to come with our own heart, with our own experience, with our own vision of what we see, and to say, let me ask you these hard questions. That's our job on City Council. The minute we stop doing that, we're worthless to our constituents. So I think it's important to have a checks and balance, strong council, strong mayor. We have both right now. I would love to see that continue.
How is the relationship between council and the mayor right now?
I think we have a respectful partnership on many, many, many issues. We often differ. We're in the middle of police accountability. We've got some different approaches. We're going to nail that through and get that done. And we'll be doing that a lot in the month of April, ready, I think, for a vote in April, maybe push it to May. But we're getting ready. We're getting closer. It's been a tough, tough conversation. We want something that is, talk about justice, right? That's what that's based on. I think we all believe we have roles, and we're going to respectfully do our roles. So I think it's okay.
And who do you want to see succeed you?
Michael Geraci. He's not designated by the party. He's a young lawyer. I got to know him because he volunteered for Teen Court. He's a real deal. Grew up in Broncroft, young, humble young man, lives near Liberty Pole Diner, you know, down Liberty Diner by the old Tops. Just a good soul, and that's who I would like to see take my seat. But he's not been designated, and the person who has been designated is a fine person as well. But I have my own preference, because I know you have to be able to go from Park Avenue to Parcells without changing your shoes. You know, I always tell people that. You got to remember it's a very, very diverse district. So,
thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thank you.
Elaine Spall from the Center for Youth, and I'll ask you for the last time, if you want to call the Center for Youth, you want to talk to them about what they need when it comes to finding 15 extended host homes, and at least 15, the number to call is what?
585-473-2464. And blessings to those of you who call us. We can't wait to hear from you.
That's Elaine Spall, Faith Davignon, Sarah Volz-Rogers, Malia Davis from the Center for Youth. Thank you. Thanks for being here this hour. Thanks for sharing your expertise and your experiences. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you Friday on member-supported public radio.